As we do every Friday, we visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and our visits are brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. Patients who choose Blue Tail Medical Group have a unique advantage of receiving care from a team of doctors who are leaders in the fields of sports medicine and regenerative medicine. They are physicians that provide patients of all ages the latest non-surgical regenerative therapies and rehab treatment options that promote the body's natural ability to heal itself after an injury. So before you're thinking about surgery, make sure you visit the doctors at Blue Tail Medical Group, and doctors all over the world are coming to the good folks right here in St. Louis at Blue Tail Medical Group to find out how they're doing it. To schedule an appointment, consultation, bluetailmedicalgroup.com. That is bluetailmedicalgroup.com. Hey, Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch, good Friday to you. How are things going?
Happy Friday, Dan. I'm doing well and about to finish up the spring training shift down here in Jupiter. The Cardinals will play their final Grapefruit League game on Monday. Then they head to Cincinnati. I'll be there for the season opener. And then back home, it's getting very close. Cardinals baseball is almost back. And we're ready to pack up down here and head back home eventually.
Yeah, you guys have your special section in the Post-Dispatch, I'm assuming, coming out this weekend, getting ready for opening day. Can you pull back the curtain, a little sneak peek of what fans can expect?
I can, yeah. Thanks for asking. I think folks will be really excited to read my colleague Derek Gould's cover story on Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, their past together, and how it came to be that they're playing for the same team as prominent figures who are hoping to lead the Cardinals back to a World Series. This would be 10 years, Dan, without the Cardinals winning a World Series, which is a long time when you lead the National League in 11. And that's the big story on the front. I've got a column on Jack Flaherty. We've got position reviews, projections, our picks for the postseason, all that and more. It's in Sunday's Post-Dispatch. You can already find some of the content rolling out at stltoday.com. And we hope folks grab a copy.
Yeah, I hope folks tune in Sunday, 10:30 at Fox Channel 2, and then it'll be shown on the website the next day. But Fox Channel 2 at 10:30, I have Bill DeWitt III and John Mozeliak, a season preview of the Cardinals. And a lot of it with Bill DeWitt III is getting fans back in the stands, how they're going to do it, how it looks for fans, how fans can buy tickets, and with Mo dissecting the roster and really just getting into Cardinal baseball. I'm really interested in what you have to say about Jack Flaherty, and he'll get the opening day assignment. You know, you think about it, it probably should be Adam Wainwright who gets the season opening assignment. He's been the best down in spring training, if you're going to do it on merit like that. Now, he will get the home opener. That'll be his sixth. But what about Flaherty? What angle do you take with Jack Flaherty in your column?
Well, I said, look, this guy is supposed to be the face of this rotation, and he should be the best pitcher in the National League Central. And if he's not, I think it's going to be very hard for the Cardinals to be the best team in the National League Central. You know, you got Trevor Bauer who's gone now. He goes to the Dodgers. Yu Darvish has left to go to the Padres. And if Jack Flaherty wants the Cardinals to rise to the level of the Padres and the Dodgers, then he's got to pitch like he can beat one of those teams. He was so good in the postseason start last year against San Diego. That needs to be the Jack Flaherty we see this season. You go back and look at his numbers from last season, Dan, and it's kind of commonplace to hear people say, well, he didn't have a very good year. Well, he didn't really have a year I don't think we can really analyze. He pitched longer than five innings one time after the season opener. They really kind of bubble wrapped him after the COVID outbreak. And he had one terrible start against the Brewers where they pounded him. He doesn't pitch well at Miller Park, and it leads to those questions about what are the Brewers doing there that certain guys go there and get shelled. It's very odd. But point is, after that, he didn't allow more than three earned runs in any of his starts. He just didn't pitch very deep into games. I think in like 60% of his starts last season, he allowed two earned runs or fewer, yet he was always out early. The Cardinals were protecting him. They were limiting his innings. They were concerned about how the oddity of the season with so many starts and stops and pauses was going to affect Jack. And they admit that now. But now it's time for him to be free of restrictions. It's time for him to carry this rotation along with Adam Wainwright, especially early, because there's going to be some warning lights flashing for this rotation. It doesn't sound like Miles Michaelis or Kim is going to be ready for that first turn of the rotation. We are going to see Kim pitch in a Grapefruit League game about three innings here before they get out of here, but I don't think he's going to be with the team to start. And I think Michaelis is going to be delayed beyond that. So they need Jack to pitch well and pitch a lot as they will have shorter starts from some of these other guys. Adam Wainwright is saying, hey, assign me the innings. I'll be the workhorse. If I get hurt, who cares? I'm old. You know, let's go. But they need Jack to be up to that level where he's pitching deep into games and pitching effectively again, if not when the season starts, but very soon after that.
The Cardinals got some interesting news 2 days ago. Justin Williams will indeed be awarded, unfortunately, maybe, depending on how he wants to look at it, a fourth option to the minor leagues. So that gives the Cardinals some wiggle room with their roster. And they also found out that Harrison Bader will start the season on the IL and could miss in upwards of a month at least. So as we look at the final roster spots and bench guys and outfielders, how do you think this affects the roster construction for Mo?
Well, I think what it does right away is it makes the outfield competition that was kind of hinted at this offseason real. You know, the Cardinals talked a lot this offseason about, hey, there's going to be all-out competition for the outfield spots. And then we got down here, and it was pretty chalk. It was Tyler O'Neill in left, Harrison Bader in center, and Dylan Carlson in right. Well, now that's no longer an option. Harrison Bader is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. That's if everything goes according to plan. And I think it's a realistic, you know, it's a realistic what if that they could find a more productive outfield offense in his absence. And then it creates the conversation of what does his role look like when he returns. You know, they will miss some defense with him not playing center, but I think Dylan Carlson's a pretty good center fielder. His instincts there are good. He probably doesn't have the speed that Harrison Bader does, but you know, he's a natural there and he likes playing there, and it could lead to more offense. It gives a new life to a guy like Lane Thomas, who had a decent start to spring but then had really kind of struggled. I think he faded a bit when it became clear that Tyler O'Neill was going to get the first cracks at left field, and O'Neill has earned that. But in some ways, Lane Thomas being able to play center field and the Cardinals not wanting to change anything for Tyler O'Neill probably increases his chance of making the opening day club because he can play center. It really helps the chance of a guy like Justin Williams, despite the fact that the Cardinals could send him down because he has that option. They finally got word on that. They like the way he's played. He's a left-handed bat. He's hitting the ball hard. You know, the Cardinals are increasingly monitoring these exit velocities and analyzing those as much as they are results. And that's probably the right thing to do down here at spring. But one thing we've learned is Justin Williams is hitting the ball hard. He's shortened his swing up a little bit and he just looks more confident and in control defensively. He's really just seemed to come around. I mean, there was a time when we wondered what was going to happen with Justin Williams, but he's forced himself into this picture. And now the Cardinals probably are more likely to take five outfielders because of the injury to Bader. So it's an all out competition. And I think there is a possibility there that they could find a group or a platoon type group and cycle guys through that could result in still pretty good defense, but perhaps some more offensive upside. Bader had had a rough spring offensively. He had only had one hit against right-handed pitching, which is the bugaboo for him. So he hadn't been demanding the fact that he was going to be the everyday starter and center. There was going to be a conversation of other guys getting chances there too. Now it's just going to be more wide open. We'll see what happens there.
Isn't it interesting, too, how John Nogowski has really made a name for himself again down in camp? He takes great at-bats, and he's had a hell of a camp, hasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to keep him off, man. He's proving he can play some left field. He had a great line the other day. He got a line drive roasted to him, and he just had to stand there and catch it. He said, it caught me. and he's got a great sense of humor. He said, look, I came here to open eyes, and I hope that's the way this is happening. He knows what he has to do. He has to force the Cardinals' hand, and it sure seems like he's doing everything in his power to do that. He's you know, not just a power guy. He's probably maybe like him to have a little more power, but he's a solid, accomplished hitter. He's got some experience. Now he's flashed some power late in camp. He can play first base. Unfortunately for him, he's right-handed, and Paul Goldschmidt plays all the time. Well, he can play in the outfield a little bit, and he's willing to go there, and he's got a good energy for it. He told Mike Schill, he said he was Andrew Jones like in the outfield, which is hilarious. And Schill, you know, you can tell is saying, look, you know, this guy's doing everything we're asking of him. So is there a spot for him? We'll see. I think it could come down between that Nogowski discussion. Maybe is it going to be Nogowski or is it going to be Lane Thomas or is it going to be, you know, Jose Rondon? There's going to be some questions answered here in the final days, but he's made it to the point where he's hard to turn down, I think. And especially if you're, you know, you got such a question mark hanging over the head of Matt Carpenter for an off the bench bat. I know he's left-handed, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to take the hottest hitter in camp and Nogowski continues to prove he's that guy.
What do you do with Matt Carpenter? That is a question I get constantly up here in St.
Oh,
Louis.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one.
I'm sure you have heard it quite a bit. It's been there's no other way to put it. Results-wise, it's been a bad camp in terms of hits and average and getting on base and that sort of thing. You talked about exit velocity. They mentioned that there's been some balls hit that have been, you know, right at them, at outfielders, at infielders, hard hit balls. It is what it is. Right now, though, you know, he went in with the idea, hey, I'm going to push Tommy Edman. Well, that's gone by the wayside. Tommy Edman is your everyday second baseman. So I do find it fascinating how they get Carpenter at bats to try to stay sharp and come off the bench and be a pinch hitter in 2021.
Well, I think now the question is, can he prove he's an effective bench bat? You know, he's not going to be pushing Edman for reps at second base unless something happens where Edman ends up needing to play a lot in the outfield, and then maybe that leads to more opportunity for Carpenter that way. But you're right, the results have not been as bad as the numbers suggest. The exit velocity things are a little more uplifting, but it's not a good spring. And, you know, the Cardinals, I don't think, are ready to pay him $20.5 million to not come with them to Cincinnati. And he doesn't sound like a guy who wants to, you know, walk away. And why would he? He's got 20.5 million reasons not to. And he thinks he can still play this game at a high level. So I think it's going to be a matter of pick your spots. And if you get good results, then you maybe give him some more. I'd be curious if you took a poll of hitters of the Cardinals' options for hitters that they would send up late in the game, you know, with the bases loaded, who they would like to face the least. And I would wonder where Matt Carpenter would rank on that list. You know, that he still has, you know, a track record of a guy who can do some damage in that spot, and maybe he can get back to that. We'll see. And if he can't, then I think the Cardinals have to have a very hard conversation not too long into the season. But they're not going to have that conversation now after one spring, because this spring has already sent Matt Carpenter from a guy who hoped to be getting in the mix all over the field to a guy who's very much a bench bat. Now the question is, can he prove he can be functional in that role? It'll be a month or two probably before the Cardinals even think about having a conversation or should they revisit that.
In terms of players getting vaccinated, I know you've talked about this. You wrote about it this past week. What are you hearing about players getting vaccinated before the regular season?
Mo said late this week that they're going to plan on leaving Florida without a team-wide vaccination effort. It sounds like they have to coordinate that with their individual states. All teams do, which is a little crazy, but that's the way it is right now. So they have plans, I think, to get everybody vaccinated once they're back in St. Louis. It sounds like they will if they don't already. But as for now, they're keeping their bubble closed, and they're going to go to Cincinnati and back to Miami, and then hope to have plans set up when they get back to St. Louis. It does sound like most of the team will participate. The club and the league cannot force guys to get it, but it sounds like most guys are looking forward to it when it becomes available to them. And that will, of course, help. It'll help protect the integrity of the season. And it will also allow these guys a little more freedoms on the road. And maybe they can relax some of the rules they're requiring of guys right now, which I think a lot of guys are looking forward to. They'd like to be able to go out and have a team dinner, I think.
Absolutely. I want to switch gears. NCAA tournament is going on. We saw SLU not make it, obviously. Illinois is bounced. We saw Mizzou get bounced. And last time we were talking, we were wondering what would happen with Mizzou. I know you're tight with Konzo Martin, visit with him quite often. Any update on him in terms of where he's at following this Mizzou season?
Well, they're gonna have some roster rebuilding to do, Dan. No one, of course, is happy with the way the game ended there against Oklahoma, and it was disappointing on one big level. They had like a lot of the parts they needed to play some of their best basketball. Jeremiah Tillman was locked in, playing great. Mark Smith was hitting threes. Drew Smith was playing as solidly as he has. He had a great second half. The cog that was missing was Xavier Pinson, who didn't play all that well. He got benched for Drew Bugs in the game. There's been a lot of conversation about that. Mizzou was going to go back to him late in the game, but at that point he had kind of checked himself out. He was on the bench in a warm-up and a mask, and he looked like a guy who was hurt. So I wondered if he was injured. He wasn't. He was just frustrated, and I think there was frustration building between Xavier Pinson and the team for a lot of the season, and that, of course, came to a head when he transfers after the year is over. There's probably going to be some more shakeup on this roster, Dan. I wouldn't be surprised if if Mizzou has as many as four open scholarships entering next season. And sometimes you look at that and say, that's really a scary situation for a coach. However, there's almost, you know, there's, at last check, there's like 1,000 names in the transfer portal this year. And these guys are going to be able to play right away. So I think Missouri's excited about some of the talent that it might be able to bring in and fill some of these spots. And it could be a pretty drastically different looking team based off of the guys who are graduating and not coming back for that extra year and some of the guys who are going to be leaving via transfer. So Hanzo, I think, is going to be hunting for some players this year. We'll have to see what the team looks like. But Pinson, as of now, is gone. He's not going to be coming back. I think it's a disappointing result. I wish it could have worked out better for both parties because I don't think he's going to find a situation like he had at Mizzou, one that was willing to kind of ride his ups and downs, but also put him in a position to be in a spot to be a great, you know, a great senior season. You know, they would have been his team basically next year, but they couldn't work it out, and he's not going to be coming back even if he wants to. So they're going to have to move on, turn the page, and go get some players who have experience and can step in right away.
And by all accounts, Konjo Martin is coming back as well, right?
He is, Dan. Yeah, there's no chance that he's getting fired, and there's no chance that I'm aware of that he's leaving for any sort of other job. This is the right guy for the job, and it's just going to take a little bit longer, and it's going to take some patience to get to Mizzou back to where everybody wants it to be. And it's moving in the right direction. It really is. You know, this team was back at the NCAA tournament. It was such a bad place before he came on board that he's got it going again. Now he's got good players interested in the program again, and they're just going to have to grow together, and patience is going to be required here. You know, this team is one that is going to thrive because it has guys who are committed to playing good defense and playing within the system. And sometimes guys aren't always made out to be with that system, but he'll find the right guys, and they will they'll get back after it. Nobody thinks the team is going to be any good next year, but nobody thought the team was going to be very good this year. This team beat 9 NCAA tournament teams, grabbed the number 10 ranking in the country for a while. It didn't finish the way it wanted to, but it shows you that that Missouri can be in a really good place under Zoe, and I think it will be again.
And finally, your thoughts on the passing of Bobby Plager. A lot of people have been touched by Bobby in their lives and what he meant to St. Louis sports, certainly what he meant to hockey fans over 50-plus years. Just your thoughts on Bobby Plager.
Yeah, a huge loss, Dan, and it hurts. And the suddenness of it and the way it happened is heartbreaking. At the same time, I think you have to celebrate a hell of a life. Bobby Plager crammed a lot of good years, a lot of good times into that life. And the coolest thing about it for me, and I don't know him as well as some others did, but the way he made everybody feel like his family, that was kind of the allure of him. He brought you in and you felt like you belonged no matter whether you were somebody or a nobody. It was a blast to watch the Blues win the Stanley Cup and see him celebrate that and be a part of it, watching him pace around the games at the finals. And he couldn't watch it, but he was so happy when they won. His moment with the Cup, that was incredibly powerful. We were talking just down here at spring training. I was talking with Rick and Derek, and Rick pointed out that Mr. Plager would attend the Cardinals' funerals over the years and sit in the fifth row in the fifth seat, and that was his spot. He was a representation of the Blues at those events. Derek talked about how, you know, he taught the Blues to value the blue note, and how that he basically gave them championship expectations before they were champions, and to, you know, to see that all pay off in the Cup run for him, it was powerful. So my heart goes out to the Blues, to the Plager family, to all those mourning, but I do think that he would want us to be remembering him fondly and celebrating his life as much as we are sad.
That's Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Ben, thanks. We'll catch up again next Friday. He is down in spring training. He'll be covering the Cardinals in Cincinnati, and that's where we're going to catch up with him next Friday. As always, this is presented by Blue Tail Medical Group, and find out more at bluetailmedicalgroup.com.